Welcome to the 17th United We Stand podcast of the season. My name's Andy Mitten. I'm in a pub in Manchester with today's guest, who is Dean Holden. Dean's a Manchester lad from Swinton. He's a professional footballer, has been all his life, still is. Cult hero at Walsall in League One at the moment, where their fans sing to the song Brimful of Asher, and they have the words, everyone needs a nutter in the middle. And with Dean now, and the reason we've asked him on the podcast is because he's a Manchester United fan. And not just a fan who says, yeah, I'm a fan. He's a lad who's had a season ticket since he's been a kid, still had a season ticket, kept a season ticket throughout his professional career, which has taken in several clubs. He started out at Bolton Wanderers in 1998, went on loan to Iceland, played for Oldham, Peterborough, Falkirk, Shrewsbury, Rotherham, Chesterfield, Rochdale, and now, at the age of 33, is at Walsall. So he is an archetypal journeyman pro. Welcome, Dean.
Welcome.
United fan?
Yeah, massive, yeah. Ever since I was a kid, really. My dad was a massive United fan. My dad's brother, you know, all my family, really, so it was just everything. Going to games as a kid. He used to take me all over to show my dad. And then when I got to about 13, got my season ticket, and then that was it. Then me and a few of my pals home and away pretty much every week for right through when I was an apprentice with Bolton. Used to have to keep it quiet. I used to go training with Bolton. I started when I was 13. I used to go to the Cliff on a Tuesday night, and Nobby Styles, Brian Kidd were the coaches there.
I didn't know you were United as a kid, yeah.
So I was there for about a year or so, but then they had places, I mean, it's even bigger nowadays, but they had places in Ireland, Wales, obviously Scots. You had to be like the top three or four within the group. So I think my dad, with his keen eye, could see I was all right, but I weren't quite, you know.
Were any of the lads you played with, did any of them want to make
Wes
it?
Wes Brown was there.
Was he?
Rick Wellings,
yeah.
Remember him,
yeah.
He lives around the corner from me now, Rick. See him most days. He's little and goes to the same school as mine, so.
Is it Leicester?
Yeah, he's at Leicester now, yeah.
Doing well?
He's doing well, yeah. He's just, well, he's had a bad cruise ship recently. He's been on loan at Ipswich, but he's trying to get back in there, so. Yeah. He's done well for himself, to be fair. But my dad took me to Bolton just because it was literally like a 15 was on a Tuesday night, and if you were in the top sort of five or six that, you were going to get a full time deal. So I used to go there behind the old Burnden Park on that little Astro there on the side of the motorway, and with my United kit on a Tuesday.
Did you?
Yeah,
so and you train at Bolton with United.
There'd be like a night game coming up, and then you'd see all fans, because it was like 6 till 7 or something, you'd see all fans coming in, going to the game, and they'd watch you for a bit, and then they'd give you a bit of shit because you had like a United kit on and whatever.
Did anyone say anything to you at the club about wearing a United kit?
There was an old guy, he died a few years ago, Jim Dewsnip, who was like a big part of my career early on. And he just kind of said to me when he got a bit more serious, he used to, Colin Todd was the manager and Bruce Rio. Bruce was a real sort of dictator, for want of a better word. And he just said, you might want to taper it down, because he used to go in like the odd day on like school leave and go training with the reserves and all that. So he just said, just taper it down a bit, just try and keep it quiet so you've got your contract, like so.
So you're from Swinton. Describe Swinton as an area.
It's all right. It's like most places, and it's got its rough parts. It's got its nice bits. I grew up just near the old Swinton rugby ground there, near Station Road. So my granddad had a pub, the Buckley Arms, in the middle of Swinton. So I grew up just kind of playing football on the field across the street with my dad and all my mates.
And then it was Dean's, where Gibbsy started out. They're from Swinton.
Yeah, I was at Dean's from a kid. Well, my dad was the first ever captain at Dean's.
Right.
Yeah, going back God knows how many years ago. So obviously that was a natural progression for me to go there. Dennis Schofield's still in charge now. Me and him are the patrons there. So
didn't know that.
Yeah,
this
so
is the, no.
Spoke to him last week about doing the presentations next. Just do the presentations every summer, just for the kids and all.
So you and Ryan go and do it.
Yeah, well, he's not been to the last few. You can imagine what his calendar's like compared to me at Walsall. So I can make most of them. You know what I mean? But he's been at the odd one. Yeah, I've seen him once or twice. Like, and then like Salford boys, like you do. Over at Broughton, which is down from the cliff, so I used to get the odd United player coming down watching, you know, Russell Beardsmore and Daniel Graham and all them, what I remember, all the old names.
Yeah.
And then it was just over to United to queue up, and was it the Stretford seats at the back end, like the benches?
Yeah, that's right.
I used to just queue, I think it was £3.50 to get in. You used to go around with my dad or with a couple of lads on our street. Used to go down and just queue up and go and watch the game. Just an obsession, really.
2,000 seats at the back of the Stretford End. A lot of people didn't know they were there because you couldn't see them behind the Stretford End terrace.
Yeah.
But I went through a stage of sitting in there all the time. So when you were going, who were your heroes then as a kid?
Robbo was, still is, the biggest. A few years ago, I was at Peterborough and did they do a documentary? Do you remember it? did a bit of a piss take documentary on Peter, but Ron Atkinson came in as like some kind of like
advisor,
guru, consultant. And he came in the dressing room and he knew I was a big United fan, so I was grilling him. He told me when they won the cup in 85, he drove through London on the back of a motorbike carrying the FA Cup and all. He loved all that. I don't know if it's true or not, his stories, I was like buzzing off him. He come in the dressing room, I was on a fitness test before the game, and he come in and he got his phone out, the camera crew were filming. And he rang someone up and he's saying, oh, I've got your biggest hero away, you're going to have to speak to him. And I'm thinking, passing the phone, it's Rob. And it was like, you can imagine him now thinking, who's this like? So he was just saying, you know, chit chat, small talk, you know, you fit, you know, good luck and all that. But to me, it was like, and so I was probably about, what was I, about 29, 30. I was buzzing. It was absolutely buzzing. But Robbo, Mark Hughes, they were the two biggest heroes. Paul Parker, I buzzed off him because when he signed for United from QPR, me and my dad were at Old Trafford and he come out and we were waiting for him. And it's different now, isn't it? Because like Sky are there and all that, aren't they? Now it's like, he said to me, oh, you're the first autograph I've given since I've become a United player. So that was like, that to me, that was a massive, you know what I mean? It was a big, big ordeal. So
that was in 91, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say 92, was that it? Was 91, yeah.
Paul's going to come on this podcast.
Is it?
Yeah, I've known Paul since he's been at United. He's living in Singapore now.
Right.
He lived in Australia, he lived in New Zealand, he lived in Essex. So he's moved around quite a lot and he's had his ups and his downs. He was doing a lot of work for Satanta.
Right.
And then owed him a few quid. But his sound, he still refuses to go back to Turkey because of the trouble he had in Galatasaray all those years ago.
When he kicked, yeah, with the ball boys, not cancer, aren't it? Yeah.
And he still refuses to go to the Camp Nou.
Probably too scared.
Yeah, he probably is. He still refuses to go in the Camp Nou in Barcelona because it brings back nightmares of when he played in the 4-0. So yeah. I got a phone call about 3 years ago. He was in Barcelona on a cruise ship with his wife and kids. So they know this is strange, but is there any chance you can take my lad to Camp Nou? Because I just don't want to go there. So I was like, okay, I'll just not work today and I'll, you know, take your lad.
He's a steward, my dad, his brother John, one of his cousins and my brother-in-law, they were all stewards. So they went over there, my dad did the 4-day trip on the coaches. Wow. Sat at the very, very top Camp Nou, obviously. That was when they weren't allowed so many foreigners and all that.
That's right. Well, Cantona and Schmeichel
left out, weren't
they?
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. And I've since been told, Jordi Cruyff said that Barcelona's chief scout, a guy called Tony Bruin-Slot, predicted the United team and the way they'd play.
Did he?
And he had it with absolute confidence. And I've no idea how he got that information, but Barcelona knew United were going to play, and United didn't know the other way around. So that was quite interesting.
Must have been a mole at that time, eh?
So you were going to matches, going home and away. With your mates?
Yeah, with my mates.
What sort of away games were you going to?
I went to ones that stick out, let me think. I remember going New Year's Day. Remember Prunier?
Yeah.
William Prunier. He got big
Tottenham.
Was it 4-1? 4-1
at Tottenham.
White Hart Lane, yeah. New Year's Day, I think.
You went to that?
What year would that have been? This is when I was going home and away. I remember going...
that would have been 95.
Newcastle away when Eric scored the volley.
Yeah.
And he bobbled in the far corner. 1-1-0. That kind of was near the end of the season. That was kind of a
March 96.
Absolutely battered.
Yeah.
Schmeichel made about four unbelievable saves. I remember getting kept in there at St James's and it was getting quite airy outside. It was me and two of my mates. One of them, he's a copper now, but he got day released from college. So he blagged college to go to Newcastle, and then my mate and his dad, he was his boss, they're watching Sky, and we're there after the game all buzzing because United had won, and he's there, he's going, he should have college today, that little git. So we got a written warning for it. But just trips like that. I mean, where else did we go? I remember going to Coventry, Highfield, the old Highfield. I remember going to Reading, FA Cup, Reading away, they won, and then came back and queued all night in the main stand for tickets for the... But I used to go to the Butchers on a Saturday morning when I was at school, so we queued all night, literally, and then at about 7 I had to leave me just two other mates to...
Why did you go to the Butchers?
To work.
Right.
Just to earn a few quid for the week, like, for taking your tickets and all that. But this was when you had... Remember, you used to have to collect your tokens, like, stick them onto the vouchers for away games and all that?
Yeah. I used to work in a shoe shop.
Did you?
In Ermston, I got £1.40 an hour.
£1.40.
And unpaid hour for...
I was at talking of jobs, so I was at the... I used to collect glasses at the British Legion up in Swinton on Top Road there. And, I was working that night, Cantona, Kung Fu, the... what was his name? Matthew Simmons.
Yeah.
I was working that night, and one of the lads had it on his... I mean, stories I remember, with Deans, we used to go to the Isle of Wight every Easter. And obviously there was no Sky or anything like that back then, was there? So it was when Bruce scored the two headers late on against Sheff Wednesday.
Yeah.
And we were in the snooker hall, me, my dad, my brother and all the lads from Dean's. And I was the only one with the earphones listening to it on Piccadilly Gold. And when someone had scored it, a diver go, it's a goal.
It's a goal.
And they go, Tom, Old Trafford, Tom Tyrrell.
Oh,
and so, oh no, you go, oh shit. And then
you know,
go to Walton or somewhere like that, haven't you?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm going mental with a sneaky cue in my hand. And obviously, my dad realised why. Like, cause it was like it's 5 o'clock. What are we still playing for? It should have been over 10 minutes ago. But
we'll have to get Tom Tyrrell on a podcast. David Meek's going to come on one. Tom Tyrrell once went to Chelsea away and they wouldn't let him in the ground, so he was commentating from a gap in the fence before they built up Stamford Bridge. And like, they'd go to him and say, what's happened? He'd say, well, not entirely sure. Dennis Sermon had just ran past. United are wearing red. It's 1-0.
I nearly got filled. That was one of the only times I nearly got filled in. Me and my mate Chappie the Copper, as I say, we used to wear colours, naive as we was. I think that was Boxing Day. It was when Chelsea had the old massive spaces behind the goals, do you remember?
Yeah.
Who was it? I think it might have been Cantona at Chip, keeping it bounced and it the crossbar and come back out. I'm trying to remember.
That was December 93, so it was at Christmas.
Yeah.
And United had 7,000 fans in that, the big open terrace behind the goals.
Yeah.
Remember selling fanzines that day? We used to sell loads when United played in London. It's all changed now. You can't even sell there now because you need DAF licences and stuff like that. And then you basically made it as a footballer then, didn't you? Stop going to United?
Well, I obviously could go on a Saturday then, so that was me the worst part. I'd still go, even up until about two seasons ago, I used to go on the Tuesday night games, the Champions League, the Sunday games.
You kept your season ticket?
Yeah, I've still got it. Well, when I went to Bolton in 95 when I was 16, I left school, full-time apprenticeship, £42.50 a week like you do. My dad said, if you get rid of the season ticket, it's such a waiting list, you'll never get it back. So what about in the future if you want? You know, I didn't know I was going to become a footballer then at 16, did I? I was hardly blessed with the most talent in the world, so I was just a grafter. So luckily,
on the field.
Luckily I've made a career of it in that respect. But like you say, I've missed out on going to some big games. I've been sat sometimes at Barnet away or whatever, and, you know, an hour before the game, watching United on the telly in the hotel, wishing I was there and stuff like that. But I'm lucky that I've been able to make a career, like, because it's what I'm obsessed about, football.
You still love
United,
it?
And, yeah, every day it's just something that keeps me going, football. Yeah, I don't know what I'd do without it.
Yeah.
But going to United, as you say, great story. And when did they lose to Dortmund in the Champions League quarters?
97, semis.
Well, it was, as I say, my old mum's a steward, so we used to go down bottom end of the K-stand. There used to be a little door where all the stewards would go in. It was a tiny, literally about 20-foot room, and there'd be all the yellow jackets hung up. And I used to go early with my dad, just see if there was any tickets knocking about if I couldn't get hold of one. And I ended up being a steward for the night. There was one guy that did turn up, my old man said, yeah. I mean, you never get away with it now. You never get away with it.
How old are you?
97, you say. I was 18. So I was like...
Steward.
I was a first-year pro at Bolton.
Yeah.
I ended up sitting on the bench next. Did you come out of the tunnel to the right there where all the families sit? So about four rows back, I've got Rick Wellings and Wes Brown, who are kind of... We used to go to college on a Thursday, all the local football teams, day release. So I kind of knew them from that and playing against them. So I'm thinking, if I turn around and get clocked here, I'm gonna get in trouble. Like, if one of the fans goes, what am I gonna do if there's an emergency or run around pitch or something?
Do you watch in the game?
So I watched it with the Ivy's jacket on and the earpiece and all that. And my old man just kept looking across to him. He was sat closer to the dugouts. He just used to like look over and give me a little thumbs up.
You were a professional footballer for Bolton Wanderers and a steward for Manchester United against Dortmund
at the same time. But like I say, if it was now, it'd be someone would clock it. It'd be on Twitter or something on Sky, and you'd probably get sacked. My old man would get sacked and probably put in prison. You know, for endangering the 50,000 or whatever. But before that, I was a ball boy for a year. Just because I was a member, I just got a letter through. And he's the kit man now, Albert.
Yes.
He was under, was it Norman Davis?
Yeah,
the kit man. He was under him, so I got there. He gave us about five trackies, loads of bobble hats, gloves, the lot, and I was thinking, it's Christmas, yes. It was the year when Cantona was banned, when he made his comeback when he scored the penalty against Liverpool. Was
95,
2-2.
Yeah.
95. Not bad, eh, with dates. I remember the times, I can't remember the dates. But I remember the first game of the season, he came out behind Fergie and all that come out. We're all the ball boys doing the guard of honour. Fergie and all the staff come out, and then Eric come out at the back. I've never, to this day, never heard noise like it. Because he'd been missing. He'd been back to France, hadn't he, and with his band. And it was just like, unbelievable atmosphere. And then he made his comeback in. So I did a full season that year. That was brilliant because it was when Sharp scored that little back flick against Barcelona. Fergie come in before the game. The ball boys room, you go down the tunnel, it's just next to the away dressing room. I don't know if it's probably still there now, but Fergie come in just giving the lads a little pep talk, like, you know, listen, if we're winning, take your time, grease the ball down, drop it. If we're losing, obviously you need to worry, you know, hurry the fuck up, he said. And I'm looking at him thinking, this is Alex Ferguson. You had little jobs to do, so I always made sure I was on the home dressing room making cups of tea. So you'd go in like 2 hours before kickoff. You'd always see like Nicky Butt and that pissing about with like underpants on and take it piss out of someone, like a bit of a joker, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And even though I was like, what would it have been? Well, he's 95, didn't he? Like 16. I think this was a year before I did my apprenticeship, so I was an adult, so to speak, but just in awe of these players, just like just seeing me here, I was like face to face like that. Unbelievable.
And then you broke into Bolton's first team.
Yeah, I got into the team 1999. Big Sam took over, gave me my debut. I was a midfielder when I was a kid, and then he threw me in my debut. It was the Worthington Cup quarter final. He threw me in at right back against, remember, Marcus Dale for Wimbledon, big black lightning he was.
Yeah.
And I just used to do what I did back then, which I can't do now, which is just nail him early on and just see if he fancied it or not, see if give him a bit of a knock.
Yeah.
And luckily, I did all right on the night. We got through. It was a great time then because we got to the semi-final, two-legged against Tram. We got hammered against Tranmere, but we had the FA Cup quarter-final as well. I got Graham Paul sent me off.
Yeah.
Toss-up.
Yeah.
Nothing in it, really, but he was just one of them. I got sent off in the quarter-final of the FA Cup. I was gutted because a week later we played. Oh, no, I broke my leg, and then the week after I broke my leg, it was a semi-final at Wembley. So I missed out in the semi-final at Wembley, so devastated.
Your point about Graham Paul, I saw him at...
I shouldn't say that, because I'm training to be a ref now. I've just started my last... I did my exam a few weeks ago.
Well, he's a former ref, isn't he, Paul? So, but I saw him... He was the guest at the North West Football Writers' Dinner last month, and he did a speech afterwards, so people like Big Sam were there and Martinez and Mancini and Souness and Graham Paul. I'll be diplomatic here, but he wasn't the best after dinner speaker I've ever seen, because his self awareness was shocking. He was talking about making love to his wife, and I was just cringing for the fella. I'm thinking,
midlife crisis, isn't it?
Probably wants to go back to football. Just why are you telling a room full of people here? Because I'm just cringing. And the lovemaking was interrupted by a phone call. It was David Beckham. And I'm thinking, not having it. You know,
He believes his own act, doesn't he? He does.
And he started telling off managers who were there. And I'm thinking, this is supposed to be a social occasion.
Yeah. Too powerful in his own head, isn't he?
To be fair,
I met last week through my referee and Alan Wiley. And it was only when I'd met him and he mentioned it right at the end, that was who Fergie hammered, weren't it, for not being fit enough a few years ago.
Yeah.
And he said he'd had 11 years in the Prem. He'd been, you know, I think he did the 2006 FA Cup when Gerrard scored late on against West Ham. He'd done some big games and that, and that's just whenever he meets anyone now, first thing he says, you were overweight, you weren't fit enough, kind of.
That's not really fair, that.
It sticks with you, doesn't it? It's like anything.
Was it true?
Well, apparently he was passing the stats. They have the heart rate monitors and that, and they have to hand them in every week, so it couldn't have been true because he'd been demoted, wouldn't he? And I think Fergie wrote him a letter and made sure he said to his daughters and his wife that he was sorry, and it brought a lot of, not shame on his family, but it brought a lot of media. He said he was on News at 10 for the week after it and all that. But he's a decent fella, him, and he's helping me out with my referee now, so... I mean, it's not something I want to do. I want to be a ref, really. I'd rather be a manager, which I'm doing as well, doing my A licence in the summer. But
so you've done your B?
I've done my B licence. I'm fascinated by that management, kind of putting a team together, going to games, picking up, which I suppose I see myself, really. You see someone like me, two broken legs, he's 33, his legs have gone. But you've still got something to bring to the table, haven't you? You've got experience, you've got, you know, you want to win every week sometimes, which you don't see a lot of some of the kids nowadays that come through. It's just a job and money and stuff like that, and that annoys me, but it's just something I'd like to think I could be good at. I don't know.
You've broke your leg twice?
Broke my right leg twice, yeah. Did it for Bolton in 2000, as I say, there. Lee Sanford for Sheffield United just crumpled me in two, two-footed, and then I went up to Scotland to play for Falkirk.
Did he apologise, Lee Sanford?
No, I never heard of him, no.
Really?
Never heard. It was a dirty game. Neil Warnock was manager. It was him and Phil Brown were having it all game. And it, you know, when they were going for tackles, snap him and all. It was after that. I got, as I say, I got sent off in the FA Cup quarter-final. And I got banned for 4 games because I'd had 5 bookings as well. So I'd lost my place and I was sub, so I come on in that game in centre midfield just for the last 20 minutes to shore it up, like, and he took a centre-half touch, yeah, ran after it for 20 yards and just lunged and crumpled me. But it was one of them nights, it was one of the games I lived for. It was pissing down at Reebok. Tackles were, I mean, you sound at all when you say you can't do it nowadays, but football has changed beyond belief, hasn't it, now?
Even in the time that you...
Alan Wiley told me there, going back to that, nowadays, I mean, you don't get told this as players, but he told me, which fascinated me. Whenever there's a coming together now of players, like somebody smashes someone, gets up, stands up to him, face to face, the other player, even if he stands there and doesn't do anything, he's got to get booked now for not walking away. Which I just can't. Who's made that up at the FA? So you're meant to walk away and are you supposedly showing a bit of weakness there? Just, you can stand there and not do anything. That's a bookable offence.
What's the etiquette if someone breaks your leg and clearly you're out? Is it normal to make contact?
I've never broke anyone's leg. You know, yeah, you go up to someone in the dressing room after the game and kind of put on, you know, didn't mean that kind of thing. I've never gone in to smash anyone and break their leg. I've gone in to let someone know.
And how do you let someone know?
Well, I played against Peter Beagrey back in the day, and he was like, he could go either way. He was unbelievable skill. So I just took him out. He's one of them where the ball comes down the line as a fullback. You can either get to it before him and literally put it out for a throw-in, or you can slow yourself down on the way there and take a ball and absolutely crumple him into the boards, can't you?
And when you say he might want to know, how might he want to know? Would he just be like, give it back?
Yeah, he'll either give it you back and you think, right, I've got a game on here, or he might go into his shell a little bit and maybe, you know, disappear over to the other side and go and swap with the other winger or whatever.
Who's the toughest player you've played against? Who's wanted a goal?
That Wimbledon game there, my debut was just, at the time, it was my first ever game in professional football, and it stands in my head so much because, not because it was my debut, just because it was, I look back at the team, Dean Oldsworth, I played with at Bolton, I remember lining up at QPR at Loftus Road for Bolton, and I remember Dino saying in the tunnel to the right back, Gunny Bergson, just hang on up over the keeper, I'm going to fucking nail him. And that's the first thing, and that's gone out of the game now. I look back to Keno in the tunnel with Vieira. Nowadays, they've all got their arms around each other in the tunnel, and it's all hugging and all. You can't be doing with any of that. I played against my best mate last week for Hartlepool. He's a godparent to my son. And I'm seeing him at United in a few weeks at a game, but I spoke to him on the Wednesday before the game on the Saturday, and I didn't have contact then until Saturday night because I'd seen him in the tunnel, didn't bat an eyelid.
And he's your best mate?
Yeah, he's my best mate.
And you just blanked him in the tunnel?
I'm going out for 3 points.
Yeah.
And I've got a win bonus on top of that, which is going to, you know, he's trying to take whatever the win bonus is. Say the win bonus is 500 quid, he's coming for you. If there's 500 quid in the street, you won't go hugging someone, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
That's how you see it.
Yeah.
And I want to get promoted this year. We've also now, we're struggling a little bit at the moment, but that's just what drives you on, isn't it? Going back to them, so yeah, John Artson was in that team and people like that, so it was just, that was a tough game. That was like, welcome to men's football, do you know what I mean? That was a real eye-opener, that.
Yeah. So you will have been in hotels on Friday nights and Saturdays, missing out on all these United games over the years, and just watching from afar, or like reading the paper and living in Manchester. Did you get to know any of the United lads? I know you know Giggsy well.
Not really. It's hard because you find yourself travelling a lot. I'm training most days, and then, like you say, I'm just most of the time now, it's either speak to my brother or my mates that have been to the game, see what they think about it, and then make my own judgement on it. Go on the internet and stuff like that, but the amount of times I've missed out on big games. But I mean, I remember back when I was a kid at Dean's, when we had a cup final, and my old man had a ticket. It was Aston Villa, Rumbelows Cup. Go on, give me the date for that.
92.
I went to the...
It might have been 93. Dwight York scored.
I remember sitting in them Stretford seats around about, and Middlesbrough they played in the semi.
Yeah, 92. And the atmosphere that night was absolutely brilliant in the semi-final.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Well, I didn't know I was going until about 4 o'clock, and my mate on our street in Swinton, him and his pal, they were about 2 years older than me, and he come knocking on my door about 4 o'clock and said, we're going to the game, do you want to come? And it was like, well, it was cup. Semi-final of the cup. Nowadays you have to get tickets weeks now. We went down there, we queued up, and then we went, and he went to extra time, didn't it? The atmosphere was unreal.
Oh, it was brilliant. I took my then girlfriend thinking she'd love it, and was raving to her about the atmosphere and that, and she binned me a few weeks later. but we went to Wembley, so yeah, he lived.
The day, do you remember? I remember going, it was the new QPR New Year's Day, they got pumped 4-0 or something like that. Dennis, someone scored.
Dennis Bailey.
Scored an hat-trick, didn't he?
Yeah.
That was the same Paolo. Yeah. And they were the days, they, some weeks you didn't know if you were going to make it to the game because you were playing football. And going back to Wembley there, my old man had the ticket. Cup final got cancelled because of the rain, so we went down there and he just gave me his ticket and he ended up trying to get one, couldn't get one, and literally just like leaned on someone's burger van for the next 4 hours and listened to it on his radio. And that was what my old man was like. He just used to, I mean, I've been a few times to Wembley. We went to 96 when Eric scored against Liverpool, where he, in fact he ran right up to where we were sat in like the main stand next to the dugouts. He ran right towards us there when he scored. I remember going to Main Road a few times for the replays, the Oldham replay when you scored, didn't you, with that over a kick in at Wembley?
Yeah.
Just unbelievable. The atmosphere, just when you used to go in the kit packs there, when you look back at what
it was like, being thrown over.
Oh,
and
it was
stuff
unbelievable.
Like that. So, because you've been a proper fan, and a lot of footballers have not, they've played and they've never been proper fans. A lot of them have liked football, but can you relate when you go with your team, Walsall, and you play away, and you see that them away fans have travelled 200 miles.
Yeah.
You can relate to
some
that.
Of the lads are not asked anymore. Like, you say, I can't understand it, mate. I say, where are you from? I'm from Blackburn or whatever the lad I travel with. Now, you just support? I'm not really that asked, to be honest. I was just good at football, so I think I can't get my head around that, but it pisses me off. It was like an obsession. It was everything I remember about.
You'd appreciate the fans.
I go
of the
away games. Yeah, I always make a deal of speaking to them. I mean, I used to go to the cliff. I used to bump off school and go to the cliff every week. And when Albert with his railings, the old guy used to stand outside. Some days he wouldn't let you in. They were working on the team or something for the game. You'd go round the back, wouldn't you, where the old stand bit was, and look through the railings.
Yeah, by the river.
Yeah, or Clark sit on top of the wall. And that was just to see the players. Sometimes he wouldn't stop. Some of them would drive past. Keane used to drive past sometimes without stopping. And you remember, like, say the Paul Parker's the ones that stop and say, "What's your name, mate?" Sign it. And he don't know you, does he? But it makes. Well, I still remember it now, 20 odd years later.
He'll like that because he'll listen to this ball and he'll.
He might remember
him. He'll like that.
I remember when he signed. I remember him saying what a big club United was, because I remember when he went into Old Trafford, there was a few people sat in the stand just watching the groundsman cut the grass, and he said he couldn't believe how big this club was. He had to sign for him. But
Paul Parker actually got offered more money to join Tottenham. Tottenham was the local club to where he lived. They were a big club at the time. Their revenue was higher than Manchester United in 1991, believe it or not. And he came up to Old Trafford just to hear what United had to say. And he walked out of that little meeting, a United player. He'd signed a contract. He's like, "I was the worst negotiator ever. I should have had an agent."
Yeah. Just give me the pen.
He's like, "Here's your contract, son. Do you want to have a look at it?" "Yeah, let me just sign it. I'm just ready to play." Yeah. He said at the time, he said he didn't regret it because he felt like it was the right thing. He was following his heart, but he said he just wishes he would have been a little bit wiser and got maybe half what some of his teammates were earning.
But can you imagine? Walking in there though, into Old Trafford as a United? I mean, I walked in as a ball boy, say, I walked in as a fan. Even just when you've been to games 5 hours before kickoff, it's just rambling it with people. Just you can't imagine what it's like to drive up and go in the players' entrance, get the kit on and go out the tunnel, can you? Just great story from, well, I say great story, it's to me anyway, it's got a big meaning to me. Was it when did the first time you won the league?
93.
I was at my dad's with my mate again there. Old beat Villa on Sunday, do you remember?
Yeah.
United were champions.
Yeah.
Well, my old man was a steward, as I say, so he got the phone call, get down to Old Trafford, there's thousands there. So me mate, my dad, down to Old Trafford. And he was just, well, he weren't doing anything, he was just obviously keeping a bit of order with all the fans. And then about 10 o'clock on the Sunday night, they all dispersed. A lot of them went to the pubs and all that lot. One of the stewards, there was about 10 stewards, one of them said, "I've got a ball in my boot here." So out we went onto the pitch. It was pitch black. We were at the scoreboard end, which is where I used to, that's where I sat as a ball boy, and that's where I used to go, right behind the goal there, before I got my season ticket, and they moved it to the Stretford. So we were just having a knockabout in the goal there, and I went running down the right wing, past the north stand, cut in Stretford and smashed it top corner. I'm like celebrating. It's like there's no one in the ground, but you know what I mean, the memories that you get. And then about 10, 11 o'clock at night, you could hear all the piss cans coming back from the pubs and that, and we were back outside again till about 2 in the morning celebrating the fact that we were the Premiership. Unbelievable memory, that.
Swinton, is it more red, any blues around there?
There's quite a few. It's more Stockport based, isn't it? There's a few lads I we go in the pub, the football there, Swinton, and there's one or two City fans in there. They're always giving it. Well, they're more interested when United lose, aren't they? Than, I mean, a few weeks ago when they got beat to when they lost to Madrid at the stadium there, Renal, I remember last minute of the game, he took Aguero off and brought Milner on something they needed to score. Ronaldo gives the ball away and the unbelievable cheering. Me and my brother Matt are watching it going, that's just City for you, isn't it? You'd never imagine United fans getting so excited about an ex-City player like losing the ball when they're on the verge of going out of a tournament. It'd be throw the kitchen sink at it, wouldn't it? Wouldn't be asked about City. But I remember ringing in James Stanage back in the day. United got pumped 5-0. Do you remember at 5-1 it was, wasn't it? In the
89.
Yeah. And then they beat them 5-0 at Old Trafford and Chelsea scored an hat-trick.
Yeah.
I was ringing in... James Stanage, just I lost my head with City fans because, like I say, they were just getting on my nerves. They were that
so you ring Stanage up?
So I rang James Stanage up as a.
Now for people listening who aren't familiar with local radio in Manchester, James Stanage was a well-known personality. He had a late-night phone show, and you're not the only one because I'd ring it. I got it in my head when I was about 15 to blag him that there's UFOs in Urmston. So I'd ring him and say, like, not being funny, but just seeing a strange object in the sky. 10 minutes later, I had all my mates lined up saying that the UFO's in the sky over Urmston. And my claim to fame was when my dad's girlfriend at the time, when he met her, finding out he was from Urmston, she was from Wigan, said, oh, is that where the UFO's are from?
That's your... I've got pals of Andy Cole and Cantona, and that's your claim to fame. I met him in the press club a few years ago. I'm James Stanage as well. I was buzzing off that. He's just a nutter, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You can hear his voice now. He just used to go on, didn't he?
Another time, a lad in our class at school, he rang him up and Stanage went, oh, hello, where have you been? And it was a pause. And the kid was only 15. He went, for his shit. And it was just juvenile humour. But to me, it was like the funniest thing I've ever heard. And he said, you mucky-mouthed little potato head. And Stanage, you know, he's a great personality.
Yeah. He was good.
Can't believe I've met someone who used to ring James Stanage up at Piccadilly Radio.
I needed to get it off my chest. I was listening to these City fans ringing in. I just lost my head. And that's what I was like. I was just like my wife now, and I went back out. We went out as kids, you know what I mean? We grew up around the corner in Swinton and whatever.
Is she a local girl?
She's from Swinton as well, yeah. Charlie Road, Swinton. She was a year older than me at school, so she went out to London trying to make it as a pop star and all that lot.
Yeah, but your wife, she was a TV presenter, wasn't she?
She was, yeah, she did kids' TV and she did a lot of stuff on telly back in the day. And then we've had kids in that last sort of 5 or 6 years, so she's not been doing it. She does a radio show now in Salford on a Monday.
Yeah.
So she enjoys doing that. But she Monday night we'd come back from the game and we'd all be there just with the scarves and we'd be singing our heads off all night just kids, and she just couldn't get her head around it. This obsession, you're just a weirdo, what you're doing.
Yeah.
Unless she's grown up with it now, you know what I mean? It's normal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I've got two kids across the street from where I live who are a bit older than mine, and they're kind of coming around, City fans, and they're coming around, and they're around most days now, good friends of ours. But I'm training not to get too upset. My little one, he's 4 now, Ellis, he said a couple of weeks ago and going to bed like, I like City, Daddy, I like City, and I couldn't see the humour in it.
No, it's not funny.
And I was in a bad mood. Well, it's not funny, I can see it on your face. Your missus was laughing her head off. And they've just been telling him to say, tell that to your dad, tell that to your dad. But that could develop, and that could be. Well, there's always a reason why you become... I'm a fan, United fan, because my dad was a United fan, and I got kits bought to me. I mean, when you got United kit as a kid, how good was that? You know what I mean?
Well,
remember that kit they had in 85? It was just a badge.
Oh, that was beautiful.
And the shirt, they had a red one, and they had the same kit in white, and they had again in blue, didn't they? I had the blue one. I should have shown you. I've got a ledge picture, 1985, me next to the FA Cup, with this kit on. The FA Cup's nearly bigger than me, you know what I mean? But that's what it's like, innit? And I don't want it to develop for my little one. I don't want that to plant the seed in his head. So she's like, how can you get so upset about that? Well, that's a big deal to me.
I've got a problem in our family, because my sister, who used to dance with your wife, because your wife was a dancer, wasn't she? She married a blue. And not just all my blue, a proper blue. Who's from a family of City lads who go at a match home and away.
Yeah.
Like, they've got all the European games, which is a new thing from them the last few years. Yeah. And he's a great lad, and his brothers are sound. And I'll get times where I'll get a phone call off on him saying, you were getting slaughtered in the pub this week for some of your own evening news, but I stuck up for you. You don't need to stick up for me, because they're just never, ever going to buy what I'm writing. And they've had a kid, And my sister is a red, but she's not really into football. My dad's a blue. And I said, well, how are you going to bring the kid up? Well, it's my husband's choice. No, it's not. It's yours, you know. Yeah. And the kid's being brought up as a blue. I am. My nephew, it's hard for me to say this, he wears City kits. And even worse, he was born on the 1st of June. So they've worked that out to be 1-6.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's some sort of, there's always some going to be some City super fan.
I can see the disappointment. Calm down. He'll be all right. Get him to a couple of games and he'll be all right, won't he? But
yeah, but the thing is, City are good now, aren't they? So we'll go and watch them win. And
still plenty of seats available, isn't there, for most games?
Yeah.
It always makes me laugh.
Do you still enjoy being a footballer?
Love it. It's the best. I mean, like I say, I've not made a great career out of it. I've been a lower league journeyman, really. I'd say I come through at Bolton in the Championship. I got about 20, 25 games. And then, but for the injury, who knows? But it's just waking up every day, going training to be a footballer, getting a decent living. You know what I mean? I don't have to do any other job, so I'm getting enough. But it's just unbelievable to go put your boots on. Now I'm 33. It's like I'm a big kid. I'm 33. I shouldn't be in my own head. It's like, what are you doing putting your football boots on, going playing football and buzzing off it for 2 hours and, like, you know, caning people in the dressing room and, you know, setting people's clothes on fire and all that still goes on. It's, you know, Mrs. is like, you're just a big kid, grow up. But it's what keeps me going. It's what I love. It's what I've always loved.
I love watching it. I play it down to my wife. I'll be like, I'm just going to Istanbul, love. I've got to go for work.
I don't want to go, but I've got to.
Got to go, because otherwise the mortgage don't get paid. Yeah. As soon as I leave the house.
Them away days, me mate Chappie keep talking about there. One of us would stay at the other one's house. We're probably, how old are we now? We're about 14, 15 when you start going on your own, you know what I mean? We have a little itinerary, what time we're getting. It was just the buzz. Putting your scarf on and going down Old Trafford, getting on the Finglands buses they used to use to away games, and just going to the game, and just whatever ground I go to, the biggest bus I get most of the time is going up, you know, when you go in and you, where you buy your pie and all that, and then you go up the stairs and you see the ground for the first time, and you see the grass.
Yeah.
Always looks mint, doesn't it, the grass.
I never forget seeing the Old Trafford pitch for the first time in my life, and I've been lucky enough to travel around the world and see a lot of things, and nothing has ever come close to that first feeling of seeing Old Trafford for the first time on the inside. I couldn't believe how green it was.
It just looks perfect, doesn't it? It's like playing your garden, don't you, and his dogs chewed it up and all that. I mean, you see a professional pitch, which I play on now. I mean, they're not as good as Wembley, but you see these pitches and they're just unbelievable, aren't they? It's just that buzz of, like you say, just the. I remember going. Remember the ship? Everyone talked, especially recently with the Cantona, with the 20 years and all that. Remember the goal? It never gets mentioned in his best goals, in it really annoys me. Remember the one, it was Sheffield United away at the Cup?
Yeah.
Hit the black kit on.
Yeah.
And it was the wind. He didn't have the main stand, it was demolished.
Yeah.
It was the windiest night. I remember John O'Kane played.
Yeah.
And he scored a chip, Cantona. Unbelievable.
December. Yeah, remember it? It was freezing. It's a stand, the John Street stand was being rebuilt.
Opposite, yes. And I played with John O'Kane again, because I used to go watching United Youth and all that, like I mentioned before, with Beardsmore and all that. So I knew who all these players were, and he came to Bolton, John O'Kane, and my first start was Wimbledon, my actual debut was Fulham away, and I roomed with him, and I went for a shave the night before, and this is like John O'Kane, he's been at United, do you know what I mean?
And you're rooming with him?
I'm rooming with him. And I've gone to ask my old man to get me some shaving foam. I didn't even have any bum fluff or anything. I just wanted to, you know what I mean? I've got the wash bag now. I'm a player, you know what I mean? And I pulled out this shaving foam. It was the biggest bottle. It was one of them Tesco Value ones. And I'm thinking, this John O'Kane, he can't see this. You know what I mean? He's a superstar. My old man's there with me, Tesco Value. And I was just embarrassed, like, but when I got to, I mean, one of the thickest blokes I've ever met in my life, John.
Yeah.
Great, like, thick as pig shit, but.
I think John, I tracked him down a few years ago to interview him. And
was he in New Zealand doing, like, flat rentals and all that sort of stuff? I heard about 2 years ago, I heard from him. That's the last I heard of him.
Just very nervous man.
Yeah.
He was very, very nervous and said, I want to do an interview with you. And it was actually for the programme. It's probably going back 6 or 7 years for the programme at Old Trafford at the time. 2004.
He used to have this funny tick with his shoulder. He used to rub his shoulder up to his ear, like a nervous thing it was, yeah.
I said, look, it's for the match day programme. It's going to be the straightest piece you'll ever read about what you're doing now. And he did it. but I just felt he'd been scarred a little bit by what had gone on in his career.
Well, he was in that kids team, wasn't he, the frame when Alan Hansen won it at Villa Park when they got beat. 3-1 was it first game.
Yeah.
And just to room with him, you know what I mean, for me was like,
so he was
like
a man.
He was about, what would he have been, about 5 years older than me or something.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So you were grilling him about United. So what's he like?
As you mentioned before, Michael Clegg, a lad I played again at Oldham with. Any lads that I've come across, Alex Bruce came on loan to Oldham. I know Brucey pretty well, so it was just questions about his old. Because I remember I used to go, when I go to Cliff, I'd see him. It was him and, I think it was him and Schmeichel's little boy, Casper.
Yeah, yeah. Both became footballers.
Yeah, and they were like kids at the Cliff. And I remember seeing them knocking the ball about. They were always going to be footballers, weren't they? You know what I mean? Training with Cantona and all that. But I played with Casper at Falkirk. I used to travel back to Manchester with him.
Yeah.
So this was weird for me because, I mean, we played for Falkirk, we got beat to Hearts 1-0, and the manager, John Hughes, is at Hartlepool now. Absolute nutter.
Yeah.
He ran around on Scottish TV live when I was close on once, Yogi.
Yeah.
I speak to Yogi all the time, he was a great manager, but he's a nut job. And he come in after this game at Falkirk, we just got beat, as I say, and he was fuming. And we walked in, Peter Schmeichel sat in the dressing room next to Casper. Can you imagine anyone else? Imagine me old man walking in the dressing room, Yogi'd be like, who the f, you get out. Schmeichel just sat there like that. Wow, you can't hardly say anything to his son, could he? You know what I mean?
The first time I met you was at Falkirk. I came up there and the Latterpid, he was one of the star players there.
Russell was a magician, wasn't he?
Yeah, very good player. And he played till he was like 41 and he's best friends with Dwight York.
Yeah.
So we had all of his Dwight York stories. One or two of them involved women.
One or two, is that right? Them two and Brian Lara, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I was in my element. I'm like an undercover cop of me. When it's a United player or like someone like Lara or something, you just want to know story after story, don't you? You just finding questions that I'm seeing what's going on.
We're almost out of time now. Good luck with the rest of your career.
Cheers.
Good luck with management or refereeing.
Hopefully management.
Try management first. And I'll keep an eye out for Walsall results for the rest of this season, and I'm sure plenty of United fans will as well.
So double promotion, we might make it to Old Trafford in 2 years. Eh?
You'd be 35 then, just to be able to do it. So that was the interview with Dean Holden. I really enjoyed meeting him and spending an afternoon in a Manchester pub with him ahead of a game at Old Trafford. I thought he was a great lad and it was good to chat to him for a couple of hours. I also did another interview with him, which covered the tragedy which has happened in his life this year. Dean and his wife Danielle lost one of their children on a family holiday in Lanzarote. If you want to read about that, and plenty have done, just Google my name and his name together and the article should come up. Thousands of people have read it since it was published on Saturday, but I deliberately didn't want to speak to Dean about that in the podcast. I wanted to keep it more upbeat, to talk to him about being a United fan, being a Salford lad, and for him to reminisce and enjoy looking back at other moments in his life rather than just a tragedy. And I thought he was great. I really enjoyed his time and I hope he does well, and I think he will do well. I think he's got the determination to succeed. I don't always see it in former professional footballers, but Dean's a grafter. He doesn't take anything for granted, and I'll watch out for how he does in the future. In the meantime, we'll be back next week, Christmas week. We'll be interviewing David Meek, the former Manchester Evening News correspondent who covered United between 1958 and 1995. He still writes for Alex Ferguson's programme notes. He's got a few good stories. Have a great Christmas. We'll bring you the Meek podcast at the end of next week, probably the day after Boxing Day. All the best, and until next week, goodbye.